So we are on the top of the page that's marked Shin Sadi Dalet. And first of all, just to visit a point that I mentioned last time, I was hoping to go back to, but I actually can't go back to it yet. I still don't understand. Basically, what happened was, you may recall, this is already from a few weeks ago. Wait until more people come. Going back a few weeks, we talked about the definition of cholesh yesh bo sakana, somebody who is dangerously ill. And the first category that Rabbi Dr. Abraham gave, it was on page Shin Sadi Aleph, was a patient who believes himself to be dangerously ill, even if the doctor does not quite agree with the patient as far as the type of treatment needed. That is, dangerously ill. As opposed to, he said, if he is opposed as far as the type of illness, then the doctor thinks what you have is not dangerous at all, that's not a cholesh yesh bo sakana. So where he agrees with the patient, you're in trouble, and the disagreement is on what to give him, then he's called a cholesh yesh bo sakana. Where the doctor thinks, no, what you have is not dangerous at all, then he's not a cholesh yesh bo sakana. So we saw the Bir Halacha, who seemed to say that even in that case it's yesh bo sakana. Even where the doctor says you're not dangerously ill at all, that's still called dangerously ill. That was what it looked like from the Bir Halacha. So I wrote to Dr. Abraham and I asked him what's going on. And he said, God forbid, I would never disagree with the Chafetz Chaim. So I said, well, then, you know, how do you explain that? Should I lay out the words? And I said, what's going on? And we went back and forth with four different cycles of emails, and I couldn't shake him from the statement that he would not disagree with the Chafetz Chaim, but on the other hand, what he insisted on was what's written here, which is that that where the disagreement is in terms of the type of illness, where the doctor says, you are not dangerously ill, and the patient says, yes, I am. He's not called dangerously ill in halacha. We don't call that cholesh yesh bo sakana, which I can't reconcile with the Bir Halacha, and I couldn't understand how he was reconciling it with the Bir Halacha. So I'm basically stuck on that. But he gave me illustrations. He said, for example, you have a young man who's getting married, and he reports that he has all sorts of prickly chest pains the days leading up to it. And he thinks he's having a heart thing or something like that. He says, no, it's stress. He's not dangerously ill. He's going to tell you he's having a heart incident, but he's not. That was one of his examples that stuck in my head. So there he said it's not. So I don't know what to do with this. He does seem to be disagreeing with the Bir Halacha on that case. From the Bir Halacha, it sounded like in that case, you're still obligated to treat him as a cholesh yesh bo sakana. That's what it sounded like. Okay, yeah.
The problem medically, though, is until you actually assess somebody, you can't be sure that they aren't dangerously ill.
Right, so that's a very good point. And at one point, early on in the email chain, he said, and this is something we're going to come to later in his writing, not today, but eventually, God willing, that there is this idea that you are responsible to do whatever tests are necessary to demonstrate to the patient that he's not dangerously ill. It was not clear to me whether he meant even on Shabbos. I asked him, do you mean even on Shabbos? And he sort of changed the topic. I wasn't at all clear, but we should be getting to that in about another 40 pages. So there's hope.
The Bir Halacha may have had something, a particular context in mind when they discussed it.
Well, what I would have thought, frankly, is that there's a difference in terms of the way doctors function. In other words, if you go back 100 years before, 150 years before the Bir Halacha, to the time of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, he talks about patients who disagree with the doctors regarding treatment of something internal, and he says, we're all just guessing. We don't know what's going on inside. So therefore, what gives me the right to say that this is what's needed? Because in the time of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that's true. Nobody has any idea what's going on inside. You move forward to a time when you have x-rays and CAT scans and MRIs and whatever else, you have a much stronger idea of what's happening inside the body, even before you open anything up. And it's possible to suggest that medical certainty really changes over time, depending on the diagnostics that that you have. And maybe it could be that in the time of the Bir Halacha, writing in the 19-teens, or earlier, it's legitimate to say that where you think the patient is not in danger, and the patient thinks he is, you should treat him as Chol HaShi'esh Bo Sakana, because maybe you don't know everything. But at a certain stage in history, that ceases to be the truth. It's a possible argument. Okay, let's go back to where we were, to what we were up to, though, on the top of Shin Sadi Dalad. Remember that he has made the assertion, he made it on Shin Sadi Gimel, that when you're doing something to save a patient, even if it turns out to be something that was not necessary, nonetheless, there is no biblical prohibition involved. It was an act of pikuach nefesh, of saving a life. So we are now on the second line on Shin Sadi Dalet, v'chein mashma. He says, v'chein mashma b'rashba, v'ran b'chidushav, reish perach rabbalazar demila. He says, this is also indicated in the statements of the Rashba and the Ran, in the Gemara in Shabbos. What is he talking about? So take a look on the sheet that I sent out, the sheet that says 6513. Because this is the sort of thing where you really need to see the original source in order to make any sense of what he's talking about. It's a classic Mishnah. It's talking about breaking Shabbos in order to perform Bris Milah. So the Mishnah says, Reb Eliezer Omer, im lo hevi kli, I added in brackets, Izmel or Izemel, me'erev Shabbos, mivio b'Shabbos megula. Reb Eliezer says, in the event that you didn't bring a Milah knife before Shabbos, and you're in an area without an Eruv, you bring the Milah knife on Shabbos. Not only does the act of Bris Milah override Shabbos, but the backup step also. Why he says to bring it uncovered is a separate discussion as to why he says that. It's not relevant for us. So Tosfo says, I don't understand. In source Beis, Tosfo says, you can mitigate what you're doing. V'im Tomar, if you will ask, via viu atinok eitzel kli, why don't you bring the kid to the knife? The rule is that the living carry themselves. He's assuming that it's true even for an 8-day-old child. That's the assumption Tosfos is making. And therefore, you should be able to mitigate your violation of Shabbos by bringing the child to the knife instead of the knife to the child. Now, he gives answers, one of which is that a child who's not able to walk is not called Noseyas Atzmo, is not called carrying himself. But that's Tosfos's question, to which the Ran offers the following statement in Source Gimel. The Ran writes, Mivio b'Shabbos, he brings the knife on Shabbos, Pirush b'yado, meaning you bring it by hand, Ve'eno mishane lahavio b'min alo ubepundaso. He doesn't do it with a shinui, putting the knife in his shoe, or putting the knife in his belt. You bring the knife directly. Ve'afagav, we're in the third source. Ve'afagav dile'el b'pikuach nefesh amrinan. D'cholhecha de'efsher l'shanuye mishaninan. Granted that when we were talking about saving a life, we said you should do it in an unusual way, where possible, where it's not going to affect your saving of a life. Sha'ani pikuach nefesh. Saving a life is different. Dilo hutra Shabbos lidchos etzlo. Because he is saying that Shabbos is dechuya, not hutra. Meaning that Shabbos is not fully erased, it's simply pushed off in order to save a life. But you, to the extent that you can minimize your violation, you do so. That's what you do. Hecha de efsher below chilul, where it can be done without desecrating. V'hilkach, and therefore lo machalalin, we don't break Shabbos. Aval gabe mila, but regarding bris mila, dinitna Shabbos lidchos etzla, where Shabbos is indeed entirely overridden for it. Afilu efsher below chilul, even if it's possible to do the mila without desecrating Shabbos. It doesn't matter. So we don't tell the Moel, use your left hand, which is a good idea. We're not, but you understand his point. Or to do some kind of a shinui. Why? Because Bris Mila is not just pushing off Shabbos. Shabbos doesn't exist as far as the Bris is concerned. You take care of the Bris, do whatever needs to be done. That's the Ran's statement there. So now, going back to page Shin Sadi Dalet in the Nishmas Avram, now that we know what he's talking about. He says, on the second line on Shin Tzadi Dalet, V'chein mashma b'rashba, so it sounds in the Rashba, who we did not go into, V'ran, as well as the Ram we just read, B'chidush of Resh Paragraph Elazar Demila, Shetirtzu Kushas HaTosvos, they answer Tosvos' question of, why don't I bring the kit to the knife, Shef Shalase Satino Gelaizema, Mishum Disof Sof, Yitztarech L'chal HaShabes B'mila, Lo'ichbos Lam B'tosefes Chilul. So the Ran's answer was, since you have to break Shabbos anyway for the Bris Milah, everything else is overridden. V'afa Tosfos lo hikshu, ela mishum sha'adayin lo chilo Shabbos b'milah. And he says, the same thing, Tosfos knows that, Tosfos understands that. The only reason Tosfos asks the question is because you haven't yet done the Bris. Pre-Bris, I might look at it differently. Ukiyai Gavna Mechalik Perak Elu Devar. He says, I'll show you a similar distinction in the Gemara in Psachim. Disha'ani Machshirei Mitzvah Shel Achar Shchita Shekvar Dachsa Shchita Es HaShabbos V'chulei. What he's talking about is the Gemara that I brought you on your sheets in Source Dalet. The Mishnah is talking about the Korban Pesach. What do you do if you have to shech the Korban Pesach on Shabbos? So the Mishnah says, Eilu Devarim B'Pesach Dochen Es HaShabbos. The following actions that we do with the Korban Pesach override Shabbos. Shchita, so shechting it. Uzrikas Damo, putting the blood on the Mizbeach. Umichoy Kravav, rinsing the innards. V'Aktaras Chalavav, putting the fats on the Mizbeach. Aval Tzliya So, but roasting it. V'Hadachas Kravav, and doing this other act of rinsing the innards. I'm not going into the specific differences. Einon Dochen Es HaShabbos. That does not override Shabbos. Harkavaso, the carrying it, bringing the animal from outside the tchum to the Beis Hamikdash for Korban Pesach, v'chatichas yabalta, or cutting off a wart, if it has some kind of a mark on it that gives it a blemish, ein dochen es haShabbos. That will not override Shabbos. And Rabbi Eliezer Omer Dochen, Rabbi Eliezer says, yes, it does. That's the Mishnah. So we distinguish between the acts after the Shechita of the Korban Pesach and the acts before the Shechita of the Korban Pesach. The ones that are before the Shechita of the Korban Pesach, those do not override Shabbos. Bringing the animal doesn't override. Bringing the animal, processing the animal after Shechita does override Shabbos. And in Source Hay, I'm not going to read through it because I realize it doesn't add that much, but in Source Hay is what he's referring to here. We find out that there is this concept of distinguishing between what happens before the mitzvah of Shechita and what happens after. And he says the same thing is true regarding Bris Milah. Tosfos only asks his question of, why don't I bring the kid to the knife? He only tries to minimize it because it's before the act of Bris Milah. Therefore, maybe that's not part of it. It's just a setup. Once you hit the act of Bris Milah, everything from there clearly overrides. That's his idea. So he wants to apply this principle to Pikuach Nefesh also, even though the Ran did not. And what he wants to say is that Pikuach Nefesh, similarly, all actions that are involved are acceptable. Even if, ideally, we wanted you to do a shinui, nonetheless, every act that you do is a pikuach nefesh action. Yes?
Why are these cases comparable?
What do you mean?
Talking about the bris milah and the pikuach nefesh for Shabbos.
Why not? Why wouldn't they be comparable? They both override Shabbos. Tell me why they're different.
The bris milah is an exception made for its own source, for its own reasons, not that have nothing to do with the pikuach nefesh.
Bris milah is done for its own reasons, having nothing to do with pikuach nefesh. Right? No, no one's claiming bris milah is pikuach nefesh, but bris milah overrides Shabbos. The Torah tells you so. Layom hashmini, you do it on the eighth day, even if it's Shabbos. That's the only connection, is that these are two things that override. Not they're not overriding for the same reason. They're overriding for reasons of their own. But then he continues with a question. V'kasha lahavin, he says, this is hard to understand. Halo b'minachos u'b'shochan arosham kasuv da'afilu shtei grogros b'shnei uktsin v'gimel v'uketz echad kursim ha'oketz sheyesh bo gimel. The Gemara Menachos says, and it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch, we saw this already last week, that where there are two figs attached to a tree on two separate stems, says one stem with one fig, there's a second stem also with one fig, and then you have another stem that has three figs, and you need only two figs. What do you do? Korsin ha'okas sheish bo gimel. He says, so you cut the stem that has three figs on it so that you will have undone only one action, even though you're going to get an extra fig, an unnecessary fig. You did only one action for this. So he says, vilich ora. Then apparently, let me go back to a case from last week. Kol shekein b'mikra shel ha'avnei nezer. In the case of the Avnei Nezer's question was, what if you have two figs on one stem, and then two separate stems that each have one fig? What's the rule? That was his question. So he says, if you're going to tell me that where there's three on one stem, and then two individual ones, you cut the one that has the three, obviously then here too, you obviously cut the one that has two on it. If when it's 1, 1, 3, right? This sounds like such a picayune type of a discussion, but it's not, because it's teaching me lessons about Pikuach Nefesh overriding Shabbos in general. So even though it sounds like this very odd case, nonetheless it's crucial that we understand it. So he says, in the case where I need two, and it's 1, 1, 3, you're telling me to cut the three, even though you will now have a surplus fig. So how much more so in the case the Avnei Nezer asked about, where it's 1, 1, 2, you cut the two. Right? Why would I even think that you cut the two individual ones? Why is the Avnei Nezer asking me a question about the 1, 1, 2 case when you know that where it's 1, 1, 3, you cut the three? Obviously, then it's 1, 1, 2, I should cut the two. What is this about? Ella tzarech lomar. He says you have to say dekevan shu letzarech chola sheyesh bo sakana ein zenikra chilul Shabbos. He says the answer must be that it's not called violation of Shabbos when you cut extra stems, because you're doing it for the sake of a chola sheyesh bo sakana, for someone who's dangerously ill. Granted that if he would have asked me the question, I would have said cut the one stem that has sufficient figs on it. But even if he didn't, he's still not called a mechalel Shabbos. That's the idea. The person who did extra is not called a violator of Shabbos. Translate that into a more popular case. Someone drives someone to the hospital because they believe the person is dangerously ill. And they don't do all of the things that we try to do to minimize it. So he gets to the hospital and he parks the car in the lot instead of leaving it with the engine running by the door. Something along those lines. He's not mechalel Shabbos. What he was doing was attempting to save a life. Granted, he didn't do it in the most ideal way that I would have defined for him, but this is good enough. That's what he is suggesting. He now segues into a related topic. We've been talking about whether I'm obligated to minimize in terms of doing it with a shinui, for example. Now he gets into a category which goes beyond the laws of Shabbos, which is hakal hakal techila. The principle that we invoke in general is when you have to break the law in order to save someone, you break it in the most minimal way possible first. That's called ma'achilin oso, you feed him, hakal hakal t'chila, the least violation first. Okay, that's how you start. So take a look at what he says. Kosev b'kiryas sefer, he quotes the kiryas sefer. Kiryas sefer is a work by the Mabit, Rabbi Yeshaya Detrani, I believe his name was, writing on the Rambam. V'chein kol mi shemesukan, if someone is dangerously ill, ma'achilin oso dvar masurim, so then you feed him, if need be, things that aren't kosher. Vinira, but it appears, says the Mabit, that rule that you give him the least severe violation first. Lo havi ela midirabanan. He says that's actually a rabbinic rule. Biblically, give him whatever, doesn't matter, don't sit there calculating. Rabbinically, you give him the least first. Demida oraisa, because biblically, ein lecha davar chamur she'omeid bifnei pikuach nefesh, ela avodazara gili arayos u'shvichus damim. Because from a biblical perspective, nothing stands in the way of saving a life other than the big three. Right? Idolatry, immorality, murder, that's it. So therefore, there's nothing for me to consider in terms of kashrus, Shabbos, or anything else. Mide oraisa. The Rabbanan came along and said, if it won't reduce the efficacy of your life-saving efforts, you should do it in the most lenient, violate the most lenient things first. Yes?
So does this mean, is it tachilo in the Rabbanan, or is it to mean that it's nothing still?
So, based on what he said before, it's not called a chilul,
yeah.
But it's just, this isn't our preferred way for you to do things. It's a din d'rabbanan that you should be trying to violate to the least, the lowest level of prohibitions. But now he's going to talk about it more in Oshei. He now goes into hakal kal tchila. Kosev Kovetz Shiur, he quotes Rav Elchanan Wasserman. As far as this patient who's dangerously ill, where we say, give him the least violation first, we're on the top of the second column on Shin Sadi Dalet. Nira Dizeu Rak Kisheha Heter Mizuman Lefanav. It appears that that's only where the permitted item is actually there before him. Then asur lo le'achol es hachamur. Then he's not allowed to eat the one that's the more severe violation. Aval ha'haz bin lo es hakal. But to actually go get for him that which is a lesser prohibition, hey leka chiyuva mide'oraisa, there is no biblical obligation mishum le'afrushe me'isura, under the rule of trying to keep people from sinning. There's no biblical requirement that I go get it. Because when he eats the more severe item, it's permitted since he doesn't have the other one. In other words, let me make sure I'm being clear on what Rav Elchanan Wasserman is saying. He's saying that there are two possible scenarios. One scenario is that both options, the lenient option and the severe option, are right there in front of me. The doctor said he needs to eat meat. Severe iron deficiency. Get him a burger. There is a kosher burger right here. There's a treif burger right here. So everybody will agree that you're obligated to go for the kosher burger. That's not a derabbanan. That's basic. Because, you know, among other things, we have that source which we quote from the Gemara about stopping to daven. Mehios tov al tikare ra. If you can be good, don't be called bad. Right? Based on a pasuk, I think it's in Mishlei. If you can do something good, why do something bad? So if you have both options right here on the table in front of you, go for the kosher option. However, where the option in front of you is the non-kosher option, and you could go somewhere and get the kosher one, and you have enough time. It's not going to ruin your efforts to save the person's life. The time is there. Mide oraisa, I have no obligation to go get the kosher option. Only rabbinically am I obligated to go get it. That's what he's saying. So now he says, v'hadishochten l'chola b'shabbos. Remember the discussion we saw last week. We said that if the patient in Z is supposed to have a burger and there's non-kosher meat right here, so we said, you shecht in order to give him kosher meat. So why am I doing that? He says, "Upirish Haran mishum dezem mikri kal lagabe zesim harbe shal nevela." The Ran explained the reason why we tell you to shecht is because he's going to have to eat. Right? Let me just make sure to restate what the question was there, because you need to understand the question before you understand the answer. The question that the Ran is addressing is, you're telling me to shecht on Shabbos to keep someone from eating treif? Think about that. Shechting on Shabbos is technically chayiv misa, right? It's a death penalty act, shechting on Shabbos. Eating treif, malkos, lashes. Not a good thing to do, but certainly doesn't rise to the level of capital punishment. Why are you telling me to shecht for him on Shabbos? Let him just eat the treif. So last week we gave one answer, right? Remember the answer we gave last week? What was the answer? What was the justification for shechting instead of saying let him eat treif? So what is on the standard? Oh dear. Why did we say it? Because we said we took... You're saving his life, and it's not called a violation of Shabbos at all. It's not called a violation of Shabbos. That was the answer that that the Maharshag gave last week, back on Shin Sadi Gimel. Right? It was the beginning of... Yeah, no, it was Dalid. I think that was where it was. Yeah, it was the end of the middle paragraph on the left hand column on Shin Sadi Gimel, and he said it wasn't on the page. He didn't quote the original source. It was from the source in Shulchan Aruch regarding Shechita, which I brought you on the sheet that we had last time.
So how does that jive with what we're...
So now he's giving a different approach. Rav Elchanan Wasserman does not accept the approach of the Maharshag, neither does the Ran. The Ran's approach is, the reason why you shecht is because in the end, shechting is one action, and then all the meat's kosher. As opposed to if he's going to eat nevela, every olive-sized amount that he eats is another violation. That's his rationale. He says, this is quite lenient compared to eating many olive-sized amounts of the nevela. So he says, Efsher de'ein kavanas haran, dechayaven lishchot me haytaima, ella derashain lishchot. So he says, it could be said that the Ran's intent is not that you are obligated to shecht because of this, but rather that you are permitted to shecht because of this. That it's not that you are obligated to do so, even though that's the way the Ran sounds. The Ran says, look, you're doing only one Isser instead of him doing many Isserim. So that sounds like then I'm required to do so. He says, maybe not. Maybe what he's saying is you have the option of doing the Shechita. The Efsher, and it could be, Kevan Shebesoch Gimel Yamim Kodem Asur Midrabanan Lifrosh Bishayah. Right? He says, look, we have a rule that within 3 days of Shabbos, you're not supposed to get on a boat or go onto a caravan. And there are all sorts of reasons that are given, but he's taking the view that the reason is because something may happen on Shabbos, and then you'll have to violate Shabbos in order to save yourself on this boat or in this caravan. So he says, if you do it within 3 days of Shabbos, it looks like you are stipulating, I am ready to go break Shabbos. Hachinami, so here too, if you were to say he doesn't have the option of shechting, it would look like you're telling him, go eat treif. You're stipulating, go eat treif. And midrabanan, you're supposed to get him the less strict, the less severe prohibition. So what Rav Chanan Wasserman says is that maybe you could prove this idea that hakal kal tchila is a dirabanan rather than a deoraisa, that it's a rabbinic prohibition rather than a biblical one, from the fact you can prove that it is a rabbinic thing rather than a biblical one from the fact that we say when it comes to shechting that you have the option of shechting, not that it's an obligation to do so. However, Rav Chanan himself says that's not such a great proof. He says that's not a definitive proof. Why? Because in the case of the boat or the caravan, you get up and get on that boat and sign whatever you have to sign, it looks like you're actually saying, I want to go break Shabbos, I'm getting on a boat now. Avol hacha, but here in the case of the nevela, mashein mazmin in hakal, eino osim biyadayim, ela b'shei v'altase. The fact that you didn't prepare for him, the shechita, is not an act, it's a lack of action. It's passive, exactly. It's simply not shechting. So that's not necessarily the best source. It's hard to say that will be called stipulating that he should eat treif, the fact that you simply didn't go out and shecht. That's not as strong. But then he says, see the bir halacha. Shekosev, who says the following. Now here I have a problem with this. I'm going to have a problem with this line. I skipped something. I skipped a reference. Before, he had Shlomo Zalman in Mincha Shlomo. I brought it on your sheet in Source Vav, and I really did want to see that. So before we see this Bir Halacha, let's go back to Source Vav. Sorry about that. He referred us there to Shlomo Zalman on this idea in the Kiryat Sefer that Akal Kal Tchila is a Derabbanan. So he says, "V'gam nira lefiyani is daiti." Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, this is a response of his, says, "It appears in my humble opinion, diladas hakiryat sefer, that in the view of the kiryat sefer, this mabit shekasa bepshitus behelchos ma'achalas asuros, he wrote in a straightforward way. He took as a given, and then the next two lines are what we read before, that it's a dirabanan and so on, right?" I'm jumping till after his quote on the third line, towards the beginning of the third line. The Mabit does not bring any proof to support his idea. Mistaber vadai kida amran. He says, it appears definitely The logic is definitely as we said, for after all, we don't find any obligation for other people to lose their property or remain in the dark. What is in the world is he talking about? So I gave you in parentheses. That's my addition in parentheses. We've said that if you have a patient who is ill, and you need a light in order to see to look after the needs of the patient. So what are you supposed to do? You light the candle, right? You light the lamp. Why don't you just take the lamp from your house to his house? Right? The lamp is muktzah. So violate muktzah rather than light a new candle. That's a d'oraisa. Why in the world are you... So he says, because we don't require that of people. We don't require that you should have to sit in the dark now in order to provide a lamp for him for Shabbos. You can light a new lamp for him. We don't require that you bring the lamp from your house. So you see that we don't really go to great lengths to require hakal kal, the most light form possible. We don't say go hunting for a lamp you can bring. That's the point that he makes. And then in brackets he writes, Divrei HaKiryat Sefer Heim Chidush Gadol. But you should know the words of the Kiryat Sefer, that's just a Dirabanan to go looking for the most lenient way to do it. That's a really big novelty. But Rabim Cholkim Alav, and many disagree with him. Ki Mitzad HaSvara Nira, because from a logical perspective it appears, Deim HaKal VaHachomer Him Lefaneinu, if I have the lenient and the strict in front of me, Lama Yehimuter LaHachilas HaChomer Lo Shum Tzarech, why should I be allowed to give him the severe one without any need? Now, the truth of the matter is, we already saw that Rav Chanan says you don't. He says if they're both in front of you, you give him the lenient one. But Rav Shlomo Zalman says that doesn't seem to be the Mabit's position. The Mishneh Berurah clearly disagrees, because he writes in the Bir Alacha that where there are other options, and yet you break Shabbos, you have to bring a Chatas. Disagreeing with what we've said. So he says, I have a big problem with this statement. What the Kiryat Sefer is doing is actually very novel. You with me? Okay? He says it could be the Kiryat Sefer wrote this specifically where the patient is the one who's going to do the prohibition. The patient is going to eat something treif. So the patient can do whatever he wants. And Nakal Kal Tchila is a Derabanan. But maybe if it's me violating Shabbos in order to provide him with whatever it is, then he would say Hakal Kal Tchila is more important, because I'm not the one whose life is being saved. That, he says, could be. But even if we will say that it's a biblical obligation to give him the least severe item, nonetheless, he says, we would not say that other people are obligated to lose their money for the sake of Hakal Kal Tchila. They don't have to give over their property in order to keep from a severe violation. Okay. I'm gonna stop the source with that. There's more to see, but my point was to show you that his statement that you do the most lenient first is a only the Rabbanan is not so clear cut. There's quite a bit of debate on that score. You can't take that as so straightforward. Okay, going back to where we were. But in order to get that source, you actually need to use this sheet a little bit more. Look at source Zion. This is the Beis HaBechira, which is the work of the Meiri on the Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos that he's talking about is the one that says that if you have a patient who has the lamp on and they are dangerously ill and the light is disturbing them, you can put out the lamp. Okay, that's what the Gemara in Shabbos says there. So, source Zion, v'zeha chola, the Meiri writes, this patient, hu chola sheyesh bo sakana, is someone who is dangerously ill, u'bitznai she'i efshar lo tzio lo makom acher o lahastir ha'or mimenu. We're talking about specifically where you don't have the ability to either take him out somewhere else or hide the light from him. If you had a Shabbos lamp, none of this would be an issue. If you had those options, then we wouldn't be telling you put out the candle. That's the Meiri. Keep that in mind. That's what the Meiri said as you read the following paragraph, because now we've got a problem. He says, see the Bir Halacha, written by the Mishnah Berurah, Shekosev, because he writes the following, V'ayin b'me'iri al Shabbos b'sug Yezu, see the Me'iri in the Gemara in Shabbos, that's what we just saw. Umash malach ora, it appears, to whosover da hasugya airi b'she'efshar lahafsik b'mechitza. It appears that he says that you put out the lamp even where you could interrupt with a divider. Va'afilu hachi mutter b'chol ha'sheyesh bo sakana, and yet it's mutter if the patient is dangerously ill, af la Rabbi Yehuda, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, v'yesh litchos k'tzas, but he says there's room to push off that as a proof. So the Bir Halacha comes up with a proof to support the idea that you don't really have to look for the most lenient options, quoting the Me'iri. Is that what the Me'iri said? No, it's the opposite of what the Me'iri said. So take a look at footnote 71 in the Nishma Safram. He says the Me'iri seems to say the exact opposite of what he's being quoted as saying in the Bir Halacha. It appears different editions of the Me'iri are floating around or something. Unclear what this is. But nonetheless, back in our text, Roim Sheladas HaMe'iri Afilum Nitam Latafel Beheter Bechol Hashish Bo Sakana Mutar Bechol Zos Lavor Al Iser Torah Malacha Shenetzvicha Laguf Ladas of Yehuda Kedei Latapel Vo. We see that the Me'iri says, according to the Bir Halacha's understanding of the Me'iri, that even where you have an easier option, nonetheless, you are allowed to violate a biblical prohibition in order to treat him. What he's trying to do is provide a basis for the statement from the Kiryat Sefer that the idea of getting the most lenient option is a derabbanon in and of itself. That's what he's trying to support. Okay. That concludes that piece of our discussion. We now move on to something new on page Shin Sadihei. Okay. Everyone have Shin Sadihei? It should be the back of the Shin Sadi Dalek page. Yeah. Okay? Good. The Nishmas Avram now adds a new point. We say, mitzvah lechalel olav es ha-Shabbos. If someone is dangerously ill, it is a mitzvah to break Shabbos for him. Right? Everyone have it? So he says, what does that mean? Vishuv ha'ara ketana. A little note here. Lama kosev maran. Why does our master, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, write, Mishi yesh lo choli shal sakana mitzvah lechalel olav es ha-Shabbos. That there is a mitzvah of breaking Shabbos. Adkan, end of quote. Hechan matzanu mitzvah kazu. Where do you find that mitzvah? Where does the Torah say break Shabbos for people who are ill? V'ayim kosev maran she mitzvah levashel avur chola sheyesh bo sakana biyom chol. Let's say it wasn't Shabbos, it was Tuesday. There's someone who's dangerously ill. You're going to cook a meal for him. Is he going to say there is a mitzvah of cooking for dangerously ill patients on Tuesday? No. Elavadai, very good. Elavadai ha mitzvah hi lehatzil nefesh mi Yisrael. The mitzvah is saving a life. Vafilu al yedei chilul Shabbos. Even if it involves chilul Shabbos. In other words, it's not there's a mitzvah to desecrate Shabbos. There's a mitzvah to save a life, even when it involves desecrating Shabbos. Velule de mistafina. He says, were I not afraid to say the following, but I think he says that what I'm about to say is a little bit of a dangerous thing to say. Hayisi Omer, I would have said, Bekavanas Maran, that the intent of our master was, Shevadai Eino Tzarech Lahagid Lanu Sheish Mitzvah Lahatzil Nefesh Mi Yisrael. I don't need a line here in Helcho Shabbos to teach me that there's a mitzvah of saving lives. Ela Bola Hashmienu Sheyesh Gan Mitzvah Vechova Lechalas Hashabbos Avuro Lutzarech Hatzalasa. What he's telling me is, there is a mitzvah and an obligation to break Shabbos for him to save him. Ve'ein lehis mahmeya ula haseis, and one should not hesitate, one should not delay. V'chol davar shayisi oseh biyom chol avur atzalas chole kazeh, anything I would do on Tuesday for this patient, chayev ani umitzuva ani gam l'chalas ha-Shabbos k'dei l'tapil bo k'fi shayisi oseh biyom chol, I am obligated to do the same thing on Shabbos, to treat him as I would during the week. And here he's going to say things we already know. We've even seen similar ideas before here. Kololo shel davar, this is the rule. Bizman shemetapel bepoal, becholesh yesh bo sakana. When you are acting, actively taking care of a dangerously ill patient, alav lehisra keiz ach virak b'chola. So the person treating him is responsible to concentrate only on the patient. Ubamesha alav lasos avuro k'dei latzilo, and what he has to do to save the patient. Mibli lachshov shayom hu Shabbos kodesh, without thinking, oh, today is Shabbos. Ki mitzvah lachal alav es haShabbos, because the mitzvah is break Shabbos. Meidach, on the other hand, berega shegamar latapil bo k'dei latzilo, when you're done treating him to save him, v'kais rak oselo o avuro devarm sheyimnu mimenu sakana nosefes, and now you're just doing things to prevent further danger. Osha osed devarm sheyosifu l'chola kavach ra'ananutu regia, or you're doing things to give him greater strength, to refresh the patient, to calm the patient. Yishtadela sasa kol yedei akum o b'shinui, then you get a non-Jew, then you do a shinui. But in the moment when you're doing life-saving treatment, you're not thinking, well, it's Shabbos. Don't think that. And that's the idea of saying mitzvah. Ure'ei b'haskama sosha gon Rav Moshe Sternbach shlita l'sefer Taras HaYoledes. See Rav Moshe Sternbach's introduction to the book Taras HaYoledes. So I looked on Hebrew books where they have the second edition of this work, Taras HaYoledes. But it doesn't include the haskamos. It doesn't include letters of approval in the beginning. It has a page where it says it's in lieu of the haskamos. So I don't know what Rav Sternbach wrote there. I'm sorry. But he continues to say, "Vilachein, and therefore, kishemetablim b'chol sheyesh ba sakana, when you're treating a patient who is dangerously ill, kol davar sheyasu avur atzalaso biyom chol, whatever you would do for him during the week, chayavim laso so gam b'shabbos, you have to do on Shabbos. Va'afilum yesh safek etzalam mitapel and mutar lachal as haShabbos b'din Torah. Right, even if there's a doubt by the caretaker of whether they were allowed to break Shabbos biblically, kidei lasos pu'ula zu to do this, azayim apu'ula no." If it relates to the saving of and the care of this patient, you must do it on Shabbos. And he concludes with a sharp paragraph. Therefore, it's hard for me to understand. Why is it that I have stumbled upon, and I've heard from my friends, they have stumbled upon so many instances in which Jews who are Torah observant, they observe mitzvahs, they know texts, they were strict about violating Shabbos, and they wait for Saturday night to treat a dangerously ill patient who needed, without any doubt, treatment on Shabbos. And they didn't do it, and they said, well, let's wait till Saturday night. He says, what are you doing? Mitzvah l'chal alav es haShabbos. You just lost an opportunity to do a mitzvah. Why would you wait? He's very sharp. He's very angry about this. As you can see here. So that's his statement on that front.
I'm not sure. I mean, the question is, he's saying that for the first, for the previous 5 pages, he's going on about, you know, you have to know so much to be able to do it right. I mean, the truth is, you can see where people, you know, are going to say, you have to know this is malachas, you have to get to the point of malachas, shrich l'gufa. I mean,
but you don't, because what he ended up with, his conclusions are distilled to...
Correct. If you're going to say at the end, fine, it's all tchuya, and it's all hutra, in other words, at the end of the day, do what you have to do, right?
Right.
But I mean, you see where that...
Yeah, no. People who learn too much get in trouble. I'm not kidding. People who learn too much get in trouble. If you get yourself into the ins and outs and the sources, then when you get into a circumstance, you're saying to yourself, well, I'm not sure. Because on the one hand, you know, in the case of Shechita, they said this, and the Mabit said that, and so on. Yeah, then you get, I imagine it will be the same thing for a doctor who reads through the literature on how to treat a particular problem and doesn't actually sit down at the end and say, so what am I going to do, and come up with an actual treatment plan. So when the question comes up, he's going to say, well, I don't know. It's no different from the fellow who learns Yoredeya from Shulchan Aruch without ever, you know, he learns the Torah and the Beis Yosef and all that, but he never comes down to, so what do I do in the kitchen? So what happens? A fleishik spoon gets into a dairy pot, and he asks him what to do, and he says, well, I don't know. There's the Prima Gadim who says this, there's this one who says that, and it, you have to actually think through to the stage of what am I going to do practically. That's absolutely true in all circumstances, and it's true here. And his answer, his practical answer here is you do whatever would have to be done during the week. Don't start making cheshbonos, don't start making calculations. In the event that you have two options in front of you, the mutter option and the usser option, so you take the mutter option. But don't do anything that's going to slow you down. Now, what if it's not going to slow me down? What if I truly have both choices? So then we can have a nice discussion about hakal kal v'chila. Try to mitigate what you're doing. Then we can discuss shinoi. We can discuss all the other things where it's not going to slow you down. But what he's talking about here in his last paragraph is people who are saying, I don't want to treat at all. I want to wait till Saturday night and then we'll call the ambulance. I don't want to treat it now. And he's saying that is a fundamental error. That we don't do. Look, to be honest, I had the same situation. This is now a lot of years ago. We're having my daughter's bat mitzvah this Shabbos. So the 12 years ago plus it was Shavuos. It was 12 plus a couple of months. Karen is already starting her third trimester. It's the second morning of Shavuos, and she slips and falls in our apartment. And she can't get up and walk. So, of course, I hesitated for a moment, and then I called the ambulance. And it was a good thing, because she had broken bones. I mean, this wasn't something to play with. But the point is that it's natural for a person to hesitate, but he's trying to drum into you that after you take your moment to breathe, then you go do what you're supposed to do. Don't let yourself get into the position of saying, well, it's the second morning and maybe I can wait a little. And you know, you do. You just take care of it. And that's what he's, I think, so agitated about here.
What about this, if it's not so clear, it's really not clear, if it's dangerous to the point that you should call or you should
make something? That is the next topic. Look at the next heading. Ma nikra safek sakana. What is called doubt about danger? What do we mean? What is called potential or doubtful danger? So that's, God willing, for next week.